Welcome to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Listen and grow as Del questions the status quo, encourages you to think differently, and empowers you to make a better life. Get ready as Del challenges core beliefs, seeks the truth, and reveals the roadmap to the lifestyle you really want. And now your host, multi-millionaire, national award-winning investor, CEO and founder of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Walmsley.
Welcome to Del Walmsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins. I'm your host, Del Walmsley, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. Well, my friends, this is the first time I've been able to do a show since the stock market crashed. Yesterday was a recording, so I wanted to get into this and cover it a little bit. So by the time you hear this, you will know more than I know today I'm going on this show. However, the material I'm going to work with you on today, I think, is relevant no matter what, and that is this. Is this a recession? The stock market crash was pretty severe. The Japanese stock market crash was the lowest the stock market had been since 1987. 87 was Black Monday in the U.S. That was actually the year I started investing in real estate because the stock market got so wiped out. And what's interesting about the whole world is that a lot of people lost their 401ks and a lot of people lost their personal residences. A lot of people lost a lot of money in a lot of different ways. But the investors out there, and for one, I was an investor at the time. I lost money in the stock market, but as soon as I got out of the stock market and got into real estate, being able to pick up and buy the leftovers of a failed market is how many, many people get rich. So I want to try to cover today some stuff that's on my mind that I think you should think about. The first thing I want to cover, and most important thing, don't miss this part, is that if there were a recession, if this stock market crash actually signaled a recession, it would be the happiest day of my investment career since 2008, the last giant real estate crash. So, Del, that's insane. That's mean. That's cruel. I understand. There's a lot of pain there, right? But that pain is there, guys, because you've been living a lie. You've got the Democrats, and really even the Republicans now do it too, feeding money into the economy to stimulate what you want. You want easy money. You want to borrow money easy. You want to be able to spend and buy whatever you want to buy, even though you can't afford it. Put everything on credit and run it up. You want the government to give you child care and health care for free. Especially if you're a Democrat, you want to just transfer wealth from the rich to the poor. Whatever it is you want. All of that money that Biden has put into the economy. And, of course, now if you're out there politically involved, then you're going to tag comma with it also. But it happened even with Trump. Massive amounts of money put in the system. The debt in our country is the money you don't see. You know, it's like the debt when I was a kid was $1 million, and then it was $100 million. And then years later, it was $1 billion. And then it was $1 billion and $2 billion and $3 billion. You realize there's $1,000 billion before you get to your first trillion. And now the debt's going up $1 trillion a year. Now, where does all that money come from? Well, it comes from the government printing money, devaluing us. So where did all this come from? It all started back in 1980 when Jimmy Carter created the largest amount of inflation that there ever was. And the government was borrowing money left and right. And the deficit was going up, and it was the first time ever when the Democrats thought that they could just print money to get out of the problem. And what they did was they decided that if we print money and we allow inflation to occur, all that debt we have will become worth nothing. Now, remember, if you owe $1 billion and then you devalue the dollar by 50 cents, well, your debt just went down by 50%. But what happened was, and you got to think about this, and you're probably too young to remember this, but Jimmy Carter started this thing of inflation at 18%. Well, now, that really deflated the value of that debt. And so you would think they would go ahead and pay it off. And for years, people talked about we're going to get a deficit reduction and all this. They never did it. little bits, bites here and there, people trying to have, physical responsibility, but they never did it. In fact, it started again with the Republicans, George Bush and George Bush Sr., Jr., Obama, all the presidents, every single one of them, even Trump, created massive, massive, massive amounts of debt. And for whatever reason, they did it. Like, with Trump, it was because he had tax credits and tax cuts. So that made people like myself with real estate investments and lots of businesses happy. We got massive tax benefits. And or the Democrats, where they gave away money to everybody else. And they got massive cash influxes and free stuff. But what you have to realize is none of that stuff is really free. What the government has been doing since 1980, when Jimmy Carter was president, is they have been allowing our economy to inflate at about 15% a year, is what I've seen the economists predict. Why do they do that? And by the way, why are they telling us we only have 2%, 2.5% inflation? They, way back then, changed how you track inflation. And the government's lying to you. And what's interesting is, they're lying. Inflation's not 2.5%, right? There's no way it's 2.5%. The stuff you're buying is way more expensive than 2.5% before year. And the other thing the government doesn't do is it doesn't talk to you about cumulative effect. If you have a 15% inflation rate, and that happens, and by the way, they're calling that 8 or 9 now. So when we saw 9, it was really 15 because they took the stuff out of the inflation calculation that we feel. So now what happens is that they're inflating the economy, and the buying power of your dollar is going down. Well, what does that mean? Well, that means my dad bought a piece of real estate for $10,000 when I was a kid, a single family home. And when I first got into real estate investing, I was buying single family homes for $25,000 a piece. That was in the 80s, late 80s after the crash, early 90s. 10 years later, we're still buying them for $100,000 a door. And 30 years later now, we're buying $300,000 median price homes. We're buying them for $200,000, and $200,000 price homes we're buying for $100,000. But you understand, the median, when I started investing in real estate, was $50,000. The median is now 300 and some thousand. I don't know exactly. Let's say 330, whatever. I'm making up a number. But it's somewhere in that area. The bottom line is this. If real estate values crash, which I don't see them doing, but maybe they will, and I could be very hopeful that they would. If they did crash, I'd go buy as much as I could. You say, well, what about the people who already own real estate? I own lots of real estate. I own over 20 properties. I don't know exactly how many I should count and really know. But the bottom line is that I own them. They're rented. They make money. They're not going anywhere. Whatever the market does to value or devalue a physical asset does nothing to what the physical asset does if it produces income. Now, if you run a recession and wipe everybody out and everybody's broke, then my rents might go down because people can't afford to pay them. But that ain't going to put me out of business because I'm not upside down on my properties like most people are. So it won't hurt me, but it will help me. And think about what and how it helps me. All of a sudden, the stuff I've been buying, and by the way, rates or prices have been coming down because of the higher interest rates. I bought one in January. I'm going to buy two more deals this month and next month. And so as this occurs, right, the prices that I have are prices that I'm comfortable with. They're already good values. But if I can come back a month later and buy something cheaper, I'll buy it because I like it at the price it's at. It makes money at the price it's at. So if stuff gets really inexpensive, then boom, I'm a buyer. I'm all in. It's a buying moment. And the other interesting thing is if the prices go down radically, then the Fed's going to come in and lower interest rates. Now, think about the double positive here. If the prices come crashing down and we can buy stuff 70 cents on the dollar, 60 cents on the dollar, whatever we can buy it at. And by the way, in 2008, I was buying it 70 cents on the dollar, then 60 cents on the dollar, then 50 cents on the dollar type thing. If you can do that, and at the same time the interest rates are going down, so you can finance it for cheap, boy, that's the best of both worlds. That is just the trifecta of positivity for me. I just boom, that's it. It's great. Cheap prices, cheap money, and no one else out there buying. So there's no competition because everybody's scared. So let's go back to the stock market for a second. Do you really think the guys that run the stock market are let that thing run itself all the way down to the bottom? Now, think about in the Nikkei, the Japanese stock market. They literally shut the market down. If there was really a run on the market, they'll shut it down, let it calm down a little bit, and then bring it back. Well, they didn't even shut our market down. It wasn't even enough of a run. They got excited about it. Now, I'm a day later than that. It's already, I'm doing this show on Tuesday, and the market's already come back a little bit. Now, that doesn't mean it won't go back down again. And remember, I'm one day behind on this particular show. So as we look at this thing, right, and we say, what are they doing? If you are the big boys, and you know this. Now, let's think about this for a second. We are living in an inflated world created by the government, right? We all benefit from this inflated world. Our assets are more expensive. Our homes are worth more. Cars cost more. But inflation now makes food cost more, gas cost more, and consumables. So the inflation that made all of our assets go up in value radically, which means the little number on a piece of paper called my net worth went up radically. Now what happens is that same inflation is killing the average person at the grocery store and at the gas station and the furniture store and going to buy their own personal residence. The first residence a kid buys can't afford it. That inflation at some point had to be taken out of the market. Well, there's that same inflation in the stock market. And at some point, they've got to take some of that inflation out of the market. So the guys at the top that know what they're doing, they crash the market. So regular people don't crash the market, guys. It's computer trading. Most trades, very high percentage of all that stuff's controlled by 10 people. Whatever the number is, it may not be 10, it might be 7, it might be 15, I don't know. But the bottom line is, you know as well as I do, there are a group of people out there that control it all, and it's all run by computer trading. And so they crashed it. Why did they do that? To wipe out the small people. To make the small people get fearful. And when they start driving those prices down, everybody starts selling. And then what did they do? They come in flush with cash and buy it back. Suck it up at lower prices. That's the same thing we do in the real estate investment world. Once we scare everybody out of the market, and I don't do it, but whatever it is, the powers that be, scare everybody out of the real estate market, then the people with money come in and buy up the scraps at maybe even class A top-end stuff at pennies on the dollar. That's the way the world really works, folks. So you should not, number one, be fearful of whether or not they're calling for a recession. If there is a recession, boom, come see me, get involved. I'll show you how to make more money in 1 or 2 years than you made in your entire life. I guarantee you. That's how good these recessions are to real estate investors. It's how powerful they are for us, right? On the other hand, if they just did this with the stock market to flush out the poor people, to allow them to buy some cheap stocks, it was just kind of a trick to make a lot of money, right? Boom. I bet you think it's because the people saw Kamala Harris starting to win in the polls and the world was going to end and everybody's just crazy and want to kill themselves. Don't count on that, guys. Whether or not whoever wins this race, the bottom line is they don't control the stock market. They don't control the real estate world. My friends, this stuff happens for a reason. And we should be on the right side of that reason, which means When the market's fearful, you buy. When the market's plentiful, you sell. That's Warren Buffett. Let's live by that. Take a short break. Be right back with the Del Wamsley Radio Show.
Teaching you with a roadmap to creating the lifestyle you really want. Keep listening. The Del Wamsley Radio Show returns in moments.
Del Wamsley interviews Chad and Lisa.
This property, for you to have done what you've done, won the award, changed it around, done all the rehab, has got to be worth a lot more.
We purchased for $8.275 and it's worth $19 million now. So.
Wait, whoa. That is incredible. I can see why you won an award, and that's great.
Lifestyles Unlimited. Over 33 years teaching the real estate retirement roadmap. Text the word radio to 88007 for a $297 membership. Save $443 off the regular price. Text radio to 88007.
You're hearing the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more life-changing knowledge? Access our podcast and listen on demand at lifestylesunlimited.com under the radio tab. Now your host, Del Wamsley.
Welcome back to the Del Wamsley Radio Show. I'm going to go to an email right now because it's an interesting dichotomy from the fact that we're talking about rich people controlling money and controlling the economy and so on and so forth. And I want to get to this email that I think is really completely different and just have a few comments on it. Basically, the guy wrote me a big, long letter. He joined up, and here's what he says. I'm starting to make the moves I need to start approaching retirement. And I want to let you know that although you put us through quite a roller coaster, you can do this, but you can't do that, and now you can. And referring to comments of various individuals who were contacting you over this and the end of the year, thank you for opening my eyes to potential. So what he's talking about is this. There's so much information out there about being financially successful that if you're starting at the very bottom, and as you'll hear in the rest of this gentleman's email, is that his family started at the very bottom, very poor. That data, that information is a lot. And so a lot of the things that you think to be true, in fact, probably a very high percentage of the things you think to be true if you grow up poor, are wrong. He goes on and says, my grandfather lived in abject poverty, dirt floor, modest fireplace, moldy blankets, the whole bit. And now my wife and I are well above where even my parents were. But thanks to you, I know there's much, much more. All right, now think about that. Think of how impoverished his parents were. Now he's above that. Now, being above that by 10 times only makes you just barely financially, you're not even middle class yet. To be 10 times wealthier than his parents, he's not even middle class yet. Now, I don't know where he's at, and I'm not making that statement. I'm just saying it's potential that he's not even middle class yet. He's not living the life. There's so much distance from the bottom to the top, and there's so many different ideas. So you can take this guy and look at him and say, okay, just to get to middle class is a stretch. Then to go to middle class to being fairly successful business person, say you retire, you were an engineer, you were a vice president or president of a company, and you've got, you know, $500,000 in the bank, right? A nice home, nice car, all that really nice stuff. And then you listen to this and you hear this stuff about being a millionaire, multimillionaire, and you go, wow, this is just crazy. This is good stuff. Again, it's a major stretch. It's a major leap of information. Well, back to this gentleman's email. He says, I'm kind of wordy, but I believe show your sincerity through taking the time to portray your intention and use decent English. Your message is better accepted. I can't wait to learn the steps I need to make and take them into and put them into action. Yeah, you got to start somewhere. How do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? Set realistic short-term goals. And I would say you might set where you'd be happy to live. I don't have the plan for you to be a billionaire. If you come in here, I can teach you how to be a millionaire. I can teach you how to be a multimillionaire. I could probably even teach you and show you to people that are mega millionaires. Right? I'm only bringing this to you so you can understand that whatever your trip is, it's important. Get on your trip. Get to where you need to be. Make the things happen you need to make happen and take the steps necessary. Improvement is constant. An ever-changing life is constantly changing, and yours could either get better consistently or worse consistently. All right, moving on. An email that is asking this particular question, it's saying, I have a rental house that is 100% paid off. It's worth about $140,000. How much of that percentage of that would I take out? Just not sure which is the best or smarter way to pull the equity out. So let's take a look at this. How much should you pull out, first of all? Well, you pull out as much as you can. If you're sitting there and you've got a property, right, and it's a rental house, the rental house is earning you X, whatever that is, $1,000 a month rent, $1,200 a month rent, $2,000 a month rent, whatever it is. The bottom line is that income is coming in. That's a fact. Putting debt on it or not putting debt on it isn't going to change how much income's coming in. Now let's move on to the second fact. Second fact, you have $140,000 of your life savings wrapped up in this house. If I told you that we can buy houses from anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000 down and capture 100% or greater equity in that, and we can leverage that money out to where, with this, if you think of $140,000, let's say we took $100,000, I'm just going to come up with a number, right? $100,000, and we could buy 10 houses at $10,000 down or 5 houses at $20,000 down, and they each had $200 a month positive cash flow. 10 houses is probably going to be, you know, $2,000 a month more. 5 houses is $1,000 a month more. But more importantly, you're going to have over 100% captured equity. So you got $100,000 in this house. You have $140,000, but we're taking $100,000 out. You now go double it. Now, do you want to only take $50,000 out and only double $50,000? Or do you want to take $100,000 out and double $100,000? Right? The answer is you want to take as much as you can. So let me pick up the trusty phone calculator here for a second. Go $140,000. What is 80% of that? That's what you probably borrow out times 0.8. And that means $112,000 minus some closing costs. So yeah, you're going to come away with about $100,000. That's how much. Now, where do I get this? Do I go with a HELOC? Do I do a cash out refi, etc.? You got to look at the very moment you're doing it, what is your best options? Remember, 2 days ago, the stock market crashed. If the Fed announces in the next couple of days that interest rates are going down, and they're headed down, then you might be okay with getting a HELOC that adjusts the interest rates, adjust on it. In other words, you could use it, get out of it, take the interest rates down lower. You can mess around with it. But generally, in general, the best way to pull the money out of this house is going to be to go with refinance and get a 30-year fixed rate mortgage that you can live with. If you can live with it the day you put that loan on there, you can live with it forever. Now, here's a point that you probably don't know. In times of falling interest rates, you can go back and refinance loans and get lower interest rates. It's called a rate and term refinance. It's where you simply go, the bank goes, you've got a 5.5% interest rate on there right now, but right now we can get you a 5%. They will refinance you down to a 5%. Now, they'll do that on single families. They won't do that on commercial deals because they want you to have that higher interest rate. But for single families, you can go out there and finance that with a rate and term refinance and pull those interest rates down. So that's the way I would do it. I would just go with long-term finance because I like to be able to sleep at night. That's always important to me. One last question here says, I'm planning to buy another single family this year. I'm wondering where would the best place to get the down payment. I mentioned the choices in my subject line. My bank doesn't do HELOCs. By the way, let's start with that question. Your bank doesn't, but some bank does, okay? Or maybe the mortgage you have right now won't allow that. And if he's saying that the mortgage won't allow it, that's a different deal. But if he's saying his bank won't, hey, there's lots of banks out there. Goes on and says, so how do I get the cash out? And let's see what he says his choices are. I don't even see where he's got it here. Oh, here it is. Should I pull it out of refi or should I pull the money out of my 401k? If you can get it out by refi, I would pull it out by refi because you're not paying as much as you are to get it out of your 401k. But understand this. The money you're pulling out of your 401k, you're just paying taxes on. That money has never been taxed. So what you have to understand is that your boss could have sat there. You could have said to your boss, I don't want you to match. I don't want to put my money into the 401k. I just want my money. And if you did, you would have paid taxes right then. The taxes are not the problem. That's what you have to learn to see. The taxes are not the problem. The problem is that you don't have enough money. So, example, I ask people this all the time at the two-day seminar. I say, how many of you paid $400,000 in income taxes last year? And no hands go up. And I go, well, you guys don't have a tax problem then. You have an income problem. Because if you made $1 million a year, you'd owe $400,000 in taxes, 42%, 40%, whatever. And it's like, well, everything that a lot of people do, that isn't even correct English. A lot of people focus on not paying taxes instead of making more money. And I'm of the belief you need to focus on making more money. Then if you do it through real estate investing and you do it the right way, then you can avoid that taxation. But when it comes to getting the money out of the 401k, you've already made that mistake, right? Now, if you happen to have a tremendous amount of real estate depreciation, you could cover some of those costs for the taxes, but that's not where you're going to start. You have to be up in my position to be able to do that. Now, I don't have a 401k, and I haven't had 401k since I was like 20 years old. So, my friends, go get the money wherever you can get it, whether it's refi or 401k, and get out here now, especially if this recession comes about that they talked about. Have a great day, and remember, it's not the money, it's the lifestyle. See you tomorrow.
Listening to the Del Wamsley Radio Show. Want more of Del's unconventional wisdom? Go to lifestylesunlimited.com and click the radio tab. Listen to past shows, hear podcasts on demand, and find out how you can change your life today. The Del Wamsley Radio Show is part of the Lifestyles Unlimited Radio Network.
The information and opinions you hear on the Del Wamsley Radio Show are those of the host, Del Wamsley, his guests, and his callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this station, its affiliates, its management, or advertisers. The Del Wamsley Show is for entertainment purposes only. Please consult a professional regarding your personal investment needs. Nothing presented on the Del Wamsley Show constitutes an endorsement, recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or security.